Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, the co-founder of eCareDiary.com and your host for today's show. Today, I am very excited about bringing you Jane Gross, who is the author of A Bittersweet Season, Caring for Our Aging Parents and Ourselves. It's published in paperback by Vintage Anchor in 2012. And many of us know her as the founder of the New York Times blog, The New Old Age, which attracts hundreds of thousands of readers. I'll also share a little of what many of us might not know about Jane. She was previously a reporter for Sports Illustrated and Newsday. Her 30-year tenure at the New York Times included national assignments as well as coverage of aging. And in 2008, she launched The New Old Age, to which she still contributes. And I was also surprised to learn this. She's taught journalism at the University of California, Berkeley, as well as Columbia University. Jane, it's such an honor to have you on our show. Thank you for joining us.
No, Susan, thank you for having me.
So congratulations on your book, A Bittersweet Season. I've been reading it all weekend, and many of us expect caring for our parents to be very complex and stressful. I think many of us probably don't even want to think about it. But in the title of your book, you call it bittersweet. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it is, as you said, extremely difficult, full of surprises, full of things that you don't know anything about and don't know how to find out about.
Right.
On the other hand, with the perspective of a number of years between the experience and writing the book, it was apparent that, at least in the case of my family, my relationship with my mother changed dramatically. My relationship with my brother changed dramatically. And, you know, there really are opportunities while you're doing this at the time unrelievedly burdensome thing, or so it seems,
mm-hmm.
To do some repair work. I mean, it's a corny word, but, you know, redemption at the end is possible. I mean, it takes a lot of work, but it's possible. And
so
it's quite a wonderful feeling when it's all over. If
your parent had
a good death and you wind up with better relationships within your family and better memories than you had beforehand.
Yeah, now I could see why you call it bittersweet, and I think many of us who are in the throes of it probably don't see it at the moment. But it's great that you share this. You've been through it. You know, your mother is your mother passed away many years ago. So now you have the opportunity to tell family caregivers out there that there is this bittersweet aspect to it. So tell us a little bit about your...
I don't think I was, terribly mm-hmm. aware of the positive side of it while it was going on. On the
right.
other hand, I would hope that if people who are not there yet or people who are in the midst of it, you know, at least have a sense that that's possible at the back end, that
yeah.
it mitigates some of what's so hard about it.
Sure. So tell us about what your mom's illness and I guess how you at that point at which you began to take over her care when you became the family caregiver.
Well, my mom was unusually proactive about these kinds of things, and rather than exercising control at a time when control was slipping away, you know, by refusing to do sensible things like giving up the car keys or moving out of the house. My mother's way of exercising control was to do those things before her kids could make her do them. So she moved from our childhood home to Florida to, you know, not a retirement community for sick or very disabled people, but a retirement community in Florida mm-hmm. in 93. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was her decision, and so, you know, we had all the work of packing up the house and getting her there and getting her settled and whatnot. But, you know, we didn't have to persuade her that the time had come. And she right. lived there quite happily and with very little need for us until 1999. So I guess that's 6 years.
Right.
At which point there was a medical emergency, which is, you know, usually what gets everybody's attention here.
Right.
And first of all, you know, I think my brother and I, like almost everybody in these kinds of situations, was in the kind of denial where we were sure if she got checked out by, you know, a real doctor, meaning a New York doctor, not a Florida doctor, that this would turn
right.
out to be a false alarm. But I think we also understood that once she reached the point of these kinds of emergencies on a fairly regular basis, that nothing was going to be more difficult than long-distance caregiving. So we
right.
simultaneously brought her to New York for a second opinion and moved her to a sort of comparable place in New York. And in the book, I kind of bracket those from the end of 99 until she died in 2003 as the period of time in which the roles reversed, to the extent that they ever completely reversed. But she was
right.
very much our responsibility once she was back here, which she hadn't been up until then.
Right. So so you brought her from Florida to New York, and it was that was really the beginning of the, would you say, decline?
Yes. I mean, I would
yeah.
say it was the beginning of the decline, and I would
yeah.
say that it was also the beginning of realizing that, alas, this isn't a to-do list, you know, where if you write down the 10 things you have to do and you get them
right.
all taken care of, that then your life goes back to normal, because
oh,
your
no.
life actually doesn't go back to
right.
normal.
Right. It becomes your life. This becomes
your life.
It becomes
your life, precisely.
Yeah.
That
right.
said, I still think that, you know, we were wise and had an easier time of it with her here than if we'd been running back and forth to Florida, always on full fare tickets,
yeah.
never quite understanding whether she was overstating or understating what was going on.
Yeah.
I just think being in a position where you can easily eyeball the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mother never lived with me, so, you know, I'm not one of those sainted, she was under my roof caregivers. On the
right.
other hand, in a bad facility, which is where she was first,
right.
you're involved constantly, because their solution to everything is either call the paramedics or call the daughter. And
right.
even if you're in a great facility, which she was in the last 2 years of her life, you know, it requires a tremendous amount of advocacy to make a great facility actually perform as a great facility.
Right, right.
And
I want to,
you know, you
I
can't
talk,
stick your
yeah.
nose in every day if you're 3,000 miles away.
Of course, Of course. So you brought her back, and you know, you in the book, you really hone in on a lot of the, I think, surprises, I think, that you and your brother learned through this process, and you learned a lot about Medicare and Medicaid, and I want to talk a little bit about that in finances, because that became, I think, it's a big issue for all of us. It's a big issue nationally, and Medicare, of course, is a key point of debate these days with the impending election. What were you surprised to learn about Medicare as it related to your mom's care?
Well, I mean, you know, it's almost embarrassing that the biggest surprise was such a basic thing, and my brother and I are both journalists, and my mother was a nurse, you know, so that, you know, we sort of felt like we should have known this, and, you know, it was stupefying that we didn't. I have since found out that virtually nobody knows it until they're in the thick of it. But
sure. Yeah.
The notion that, you know, at least at the moment, the one cohort of the population that has universal health care is people 65 and over,
right,
is really a fallacy, because they only have health care for doctors and hospitals and medications and, you know, active, what's known as acute medical care.
Right.
Medicare does not cover long-term care. So,
right,
you know, if you need somebody to help them at home, if you need somebody to drive them around, if they move into an assisted living community, if they move into a nursing home, I mean, anything that isn't, you know, sort of the equivalent of a heart transplant or a hip replacement, you're on your own.
Right. Right.
And that was shocking to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the sort of, what do you mean Medicare doesn't cover it? And
there's a lot,
you know,
of that. What do you mean? Yeah.
It won't even under Obamacare.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are some little changes around the edges, but by and large, families are on their own to pay for this unless they're impoverished under the definition of whatever state they happen to live in. And if they're impoverished, then they're entitled to Medicaid.
And that's the big surprise, too, is that, you know, Medicaid and Medicare benefits vary quite dramatically by state.
Everything varies dramatically by state. And,
right,
you know, one of the... you know, to go back to the moving her, that was another huge surprise, is, you know, I assumed that what we knew as a result of the 6 years she'd been in Florida was simply transferable knowledge, and it isn't, because the laws and the licensing for different kinds of facilities are... I mean, you have to start the whole learning process from scratch when you cross a state line.
Wow.
But, you know, people, I think, have no clue. First of all, they have no clue that Medicare doesn't pay for it. Secondly, I don't think that they have any clue how much it costs. And I did a very, very, very rough, you know, sort of back of the matchbook calculation for the book,
mm-hmm,
of what my mother spent out of her own pocket. And I was including nothing but big ticket items.
Right.
You know, the facilities she lived in, her Medigap policy. My mother actually had a long-term care insurance policy, which turned out to be useless for various reasons. But
right,
in those 9 years or however many years it was, my mother spent bare minimum $500,000 and then wound up impoverished and on Medicaid.
Wow.
My brother and I spent far less than that, and thankfully we didn't keep track.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, how many of us have a parent, and I didn't know my mother had $500,000.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think very many of us have a parent with $500,000 to throw at this, which means
right.
we're going to have
right.
to take care of them or we're going to have to pay for them.
Right, right. And on that note about what family members spend, there is a study on that which says that that family members spend about an average of close to $6,000 a year on, you know, extraneous expenses around their parents' care. So,
as I said,
you know,
we never
yeah.
tallied it, and I'm glad
yeah.
because, you know, what value would there be in knowing
right.
it?
Right.
I would say that one of the things that didn't occur to me until after it was over is if we had understood that she was almost surely going to run out of money and then wind up, you know, perfectly legally entitled to Medicaid. I mean, you know, not as a welfare queen, which is how she felt, but, you
right.
know, entirely entitled. If I had really understood that at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
an awful lot of the money that my brother Michael and I spent ourselves, not out of stinginess, but out of strategy.
Right.
I would have taken out of her bank accounts and spent because it would have got her to Medicaid faster.
Mm.
I mean, in other words, we were being good children. But the result of being good children is, you know, we were both spending down our retirement money and slowing down her eligibility for a benefit that she needed and deserved.
Right. And that brings us to the nursing home, because that is, my understanding is that that is how most families are able to pay for the exorbitant costs of staying in a nursing home through Medicaid. So would you like to tell us a little bit about that experience? What was it like
yeah,
for your mother?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. First of all, my mother had a very good nursing home experience, which, you know, is, I realize, really counterintuitive. But
yeah.
She was completely intact cognitively and completely shot physically. I mean, by the end, she was paralyzed, incontinent, couldn't speak, knew exactly what was going on. She got great care. I mean, it took a lot of looking over people's shoulders, but she got great care. And the fact that other people were caring for her gave us the opportunity to be her children. And, you know, it's a funny word, but enjoy that time with her
right.
rather than, you know, be doing all the hands-on stuff. Also,
right.
in a nursing home, there's a level of, you know, forgive the jargon, but psychosocial support. I mean, nurses, social workers, clergy, physical therapists. I mean, you're just surrounded by people who don't just regard the resident as their client, but regard the whole family as their client. And that was much more important to me than it was to my brother. But I got tremendous support, tremendous advice from those people.
Right.
And the biggest financial difference between a nursing home and an assisted living facility, besides the fact that everybody thinks that, you know, they're going to get struck by lightning if they send their mother to a nursing home, is
right.
that because nursing homes are federally regulated and very tightly regulated, and assisted living isn't. They can't throw you out of a nursing home when you run out of money. They can throw you out of an assisted living place. Mm-hmm. What they can do at a nursing home, if they have a population that is, I can't remember the percentage, but I think the number is 80% on Medicaid, mm-hmm. which is common. I mean, I would doubt that you're going to find very many nursing homes that don't have that percentage of Medicaid patients.
Right.
While they can't throw you out at that point, they can give you preferential treatment on the way in if you still have money.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see nursing home on the horizon and you make the move while you still have enough money to pay a couple months of it out of pocket,
mm-hmm.
Then, I mean, in effect, you have tenure. If you get on the waiting list and you are already impoverished,
mm-hmm.
They don't have to take you. And in my mother's case, she lived there for, I would say, more than half the time she was there as self-pay, which, depending on where you live, depending on the quality of the nursing home, depending on whether you have a single room, which my mother did.
Right.
I mean, my mother's single room cost $14,000 a month.
Wow.
And the first time I wrote about that in New Old Age, we must have gotten 50 readers' comments, you know, saying, surely you mean
$4,000. No, right.
But, you know, again, unless as the adult child, you know, you're sitting around panting for the inheritance, on some level, what difference does it make?
Right.
I mean, it's a funny way of putting it, but,
sure.
You know, it was certainly clear to me by then that the issue wasn't the inheritance. The issue was were we also going to go broke?
Right. Wow. I bet I'd like to invite our listeners to please comment as well, because many of our listeners, I think, are going through this for the first time, and they're in the midst of or maybe in the very beginning stages of this process, and I think we'll probably be very alarmed by the numbers as well. And the big lesson learned here is that we really need to. I mean, I think your book says this very clearly, that this is. For the benefit of being prepared and not only knowing what's to come for your parent, but also for yourself, and to prepare for your own end of life. And I'd like to switch gears a little bit, because you talk in your book about, you know, I'm talking about now towards the end of life and your experience with your mom as she was nearing her death. But it seems contradictory, but how can, you know, you talk about less care often can be better care. I mean, that's what I hear a lot of, you know, people who've been through this say, I'd like you to elaborate on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was not clear based on good science at the time my mother was still alive. My mother was somebody who, you know, did not want her life prolonged at all costs. And, from very early on in the process, simply refused certain things, you know. For example, a mammogram, you know. She knew if they found something, she wasn't going to let them treat it. So, you know, what's the point of having a map to someplace you're not going.
Right.
And but it's abundantly clear now. I mean, there's just one study after another. Many of them reported just fabulously by my colleague Paul Spahn at New Old Age. I mean, every day there seems to be a new study about the aggressive treatment that is done to old people and the tests performed on old people and the medication given to old people that at the very best don't do them any good at all and quite often do them harm.
Yeah.
Again, one of the things that I liked a lot about a nursing home is that it's surprisingly not a medicalized facility. It's much more the province of nurses and social workers, and the attitude is much more, you know, how can we make this period of time better, more comfortable, more enjoyable, et cetera, not
right.
try to fix everything, because ultimately you can't fix everything.
Right, right. And now
my mother used to joke right. that the reward to living to be 85 without being taken out by any of the major diseases was that, you know, she had the pleasure of rotting to death. And, you know, it's not a felicitous phrase, but, you know, she had a mouth on her. And that really essentially is what happens. I mean, you
right.
either physically, cognitively, or both, everything just starts to go. And
right.
up to a point,
right.
you can put the wheels back on the bicycle, but you can't put the wheels back on the bicycle indefinitely.
Right.
And the harm done to old people, the suffering that old
yeah.
people experience as a result of this is, I mean, it's far more complicated than this, but I would argue has much less to do with what the old people want themselves than the fact that in a fee-for-service medical system, it's a very rare doctor who will tell you that one of the options is to do nothing.
Right.
And I think, frankly, it's a very rare child, adult child, who, when told by a doctor, you know, oh, we can fix that.
Right.
Don't say yes. I mean, yes is the default answer. You
right.
have to have thought about it in advance. You have to have talked about it as a family. Or you have to have one of these very unusual mothers like I did, who, you know, was, you know.
She was very practical.
Or she was probably already telling me when she was 50 what she didn't want done to her. And the line moves, you know. So what
right.
you think they're going to want and what they're actually going to want, you know, sometimes they want more, sometimes they want less. I mean, it's not
right.
entirely linear, but by and large, after a certain age, at least in my view and increasingly in the science, you know, less is more.
Right. Jane, I really am so pleased that you were able to join us today, and I cannot believe that we've already run out of time. There's so many other questions I'd love to ask you. Maybe sometime in the future we can have you return as our guest. I would like to inform the audience that if you'd like to learn more about Jane Gross and her book, A Bittersweet Season, you can visit her on her Facebook fan page, which I believe is on facebook.com/Jane Gross Author, or you can just type her name into the search area of Facebook and you'll find her page.
Jane, are there any other venues where people can find about?
No, I would say that there's quite a lot of background material, both about the book and about me, on the Amazon page for the book as well.
Oh, terrific. Of course, Amazon.com.
We're not supposed to say that, but
okay.
There's a lot of stuff there.
Okay, very good. Well, I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in, and join us next Tuesday, August 28th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when Marjorie Papst will interview Dr. John Guarneri on the aspects of being present, being in the present with patients and our loved ones. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, visit us on ecarediary.com, and you can also find us, of course, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thank you, Jane Gross. We really appreciate having you on the show today and for sharing your experiences. And everyone can find Jane on Facebook.com as well as, of course, on our great book-selling websites. Thank you again.
Thank you, Susan, very, very much. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.